Fridays.
And now the act you've all been waiting for.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show.
I am the smartest man alive!
Call Johnny now at 844-5600.
Funny name for a guy.
20 years of sports coverage. This is Nashville's sports original.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
On WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
And happy Tuesday, everyone. Johnny Ballpark Frank's with you. Zach Williams making sure everything runs great. Don't forget, coming up at 6:20, the Atlanta Braves back in action. I think they forgot that they actually have a series in Baltimore, because last night they certainly did not look that way, as they didn't show up. They get beat 14-1. Here's the thing. If you lose 2-1, 14-1, guess what it means? A loss. So you put it away, and bam, you move forward. Braves back in action once again, 6:20 for the pregame, and the first pitch around 6:35. Jam-packed show coming up at 4:35. Ryan Callahan visits us from Knoxville. He covers the Vols for GoVols247.com. Just after 5, as long as there's not breaking news with regards to the Big Ten, they're expecting a decision later today whether or not and when they're going to move forward as far as football is concerned. Barrett Slee will join us. He is the National College Football writer with CBSSports.com, a co-host on SiriusXM College Sports Channel 84. And then around 5:35, Teresa Walker with the Associated Press here in Nashville. All right, so week one concludes as far as the NFL last night, Zach. And I have to be honest with you, I was running around in my the man cave, the entertainment room. Luckily, it's large enough to do so. It was reminding me of back in the day before 2003, Jeff Fisher ball, where that he would just lull you to sleep and win a game with a field goal 13-10 or something.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of those games last night. And I don't know if it was because of the lack of fans in the stadium. And no, I'm not going to count the 500 family members as fans in the stadium. I don't know what it was, but I was having to struggle to stay awake.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was weird because even without fans, who cares about that? I think just it looked like the on-the-field play, it seemed like everybody was moving really slow. Just in general, it didn't see it now compared to some of the games we watched Sunday.
Well, maybe because Pittsburgh looks so sharp. I mean, Pittsburgh to me, if you thought that Ben Roethlisberger was over, forget about it. Pittsburgh is one of the tougher teams in the AFC.
Built to build be a Super Bowl team a couple years ago.
They look every part of a Super Bowl contender. I love the play of Benny Snell Jr. Yeah, he dropped the ball, put the ball on the turf, and I get that. But when you think about the 1-2 punch they have with running back, and then you think about Schuster, but Ben Roethlisberger looked great last night, considering he had not played since week 2 of last year. He misremembered the last 14 games with the elbow surgery. And the fact no preseason games, Pittsburgh to me ever bit the look of a contender.
Well, the good thing for them is that their offense doesn't have to be that great. Their defense is
solid,
so good, top three defense in the league right now, and they don't have to worry about having that great of offense. They can get away with scoring 24 and winning a game.
All right, am I just the only one? You and I were talking about this before we came on today because it looked like everybody missed the lead story. If I told you that the Titans were having to play last night on offense for more than a half without Ryan Tannehill, you would raise your eyebrows, right?
Right.
Rashawn Evans is your signal caller on defense. Mm-hmm. He's your Mike linebacker, and he is the one calling your defensive plays. He loses his composure. With that is so unlike him. I think that's what the fourth penalty in 2+ seasons for Rashawn Evans in the NFL. He's just not that individual that loses his composure. He did last night. He gets kicked out of the game in the second quarter. That's a big loss. And I think that's really understated. And mainly, and obviously the reason why is because of the kicking issues the Titans had with the missed 3 field goals, which should have been made, and the missed extra point. The game never should have been close last night.
No. And that's the thing with this. If you're a Titans fan and you're saying, "Oh, it looked really rough. I'm worried about next week." this was the floor for the Titans. I really believe this is the lowest low you're going to see the Titans this season, which unsequently was last year against the Broncos as well.
Right.
But I think this is as bad as you're going to see. You're going to see Tannehill having 279, two touchdowns as a okay, not that great day. But that's not where his ceiling is. Derrick Henry, 31 rushes with 100 yards over.
Yeah.
He's going to get a touchdown usually on 31 carries a game.
If I told you that the Tennessee Titans, if you missed the game, and I said they won 27-14, Tannehill threw for right around 250 yards, two touchdowns. Derrick Henry rushed for 116 yards. Corey Davis had seven catches for 101 yards. You would have been happy about that and moved on.
Yep.
So the storyline is get the special teams in order, because that was an issue last night, and the reason why we're talking 16-14 instead of 27-14, well, for example.
What's unfortunate is that this is the storyline from last year. It still didn't get fixed, and I've got to question this coaching staff. I've got to question
special teams?
The special teams, because we're saying that they, for some reason, saw Gostkowski as a viable option. And this is the same group that thought Ryan Succop last year was a viable option, that Cairo Santos was a viable option. And so far, everybody they bring in has not panned out, except for Joseph. And I get it. One field goal and, what was it, 9 extra points he ended up hitting. But he never missed anything. He made everything he made. But somewhere in camp, he didn't look good, and they thought Gostkowski was there. The same way we questioned the bullpen coaching for the Braves.
Not the bullpen coaching, but the pitching coach.
And if is the same way we have to question this Titans special teams coaching, because something's not clicking there. Something is being missed. You're telling me this guy walked in with a week's notice, and they thought he was better than Joseph.
Well, mainly because this guy has Hall of Famer written all over him from a standpoint of what he has been able to do in his entire career. And that's the problem.
I get that, but you look at what have you done for me lately in the NFL, right?
Well, for the Titans, he kicked the game-winning field goal, which, by the way, never should have been in that position in the first place.
But causes amnesia all Titans fans, by the way.
And with this said, you know, remember, and we knew there were going to be issues because of, you know, the no preseason games, whatever the case may be, but Ryan Tannehill probably should have had 3 interceptions.
Oof. He got saved by Jarrell Casey. Jarrell Casey might have had a Titans jersey underneath that Broncos.
He got one because of had nothing to do with the play itself, but it was a call away from the action, and because of that, that would have been a huge one too.
Huge.
To start with. And but hey, look, give credit to with the Titans. You go on the road, and it wasn't pretty. There was mistakes. These are the kind of things in Week 1 that coaches love, honestly. They don't want to be perfect Week 1.
No.
They want to get a win on the road, and guess what? Now they have the attention of the players. The players can't get too high because they went on the road and got a victory. If they had cruised like 38-6 or something, that's tough for the coaching staff, but that usually means a lull and a letdown coming up Week 2. The fact that they played like that, and look, they had to overcome adversity. The fact that with when Sean Evans went out, that is a huge story that has gotten missed. Mm-hmm. When he went out, you lose your middle linebacker.
Well, you know, with Tannehill, early it seemed like he was very flustered, very quick. And he had that one where he was getting sacked and he just threw it up in the air. I mean, there was no reason to even let go of that. That could have been intercepted. But
by the way, that almost got completed too.
I know, which is crazy. So just shouldn't have worked either way. But
It reminds me of Chad Kelly at Ole Miss when they upset Alabama, I think, for the second straight year. He threw one like that off the top of his head and ended up a touchdown. So, you know, sometimes maybe those prayers are answered.
Just get lucky.
Probably should have eaten the ball, but hey, it didn't hurt.
As the game goes on, I don't know if you caught this. The camera caught this a couple times. When it got into those pressure situations, he's sitting there smiling behind the center. He's smiling as he's going to call the play. Like, he's like, oh, okay, here's the defense. I see what's happening now. Corey's going to be
well,
open.
Well, he's comfortable.
Yeah, he got comfortable very quick, which is good. And it was almost, like a creepy smile.
I mean, and look, you know, Taylor Lewan goes out with the injury too. So now all of a sudden you're down to, you're having a backup tackle now at left tackle. So, you know, look, there's all kinds of things.
He ended up coming back though.
I know, but you still missed a couple
right,
series. And
right.
So, but the bottom line is you overcame the special teams issues that cost you 11 points right there. You lose your signal caller on defense for more than a half the game, and you still find a way to get the game.
Do you think, and I'd love for anybody to call in as well on this, but do you think just because Gostkowski hit the game winner is all forgiven? Can we really say
not
he
forgiven,
redeemed himself?
Not forgiven, but because of his track record, it's just like, you know, you just have sometimes you just have one of those games. And the fact that he had no preseason games, no real action as far as look, and it's not just him too. Remember, one of the kicks was blocked. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have issues all the way around. So it's not just on one person. You can get those things corrected. And look, they got it corrected when it counted most, when you had the game on the line. And but, you know, there's Tucker McCann, who had an outstanding career. I mean, here was a guy recruited out of high school by Alabama, by Florida State, had a nice career with Missouri. And you know, for a while there, it looked like he was going to be the kicker. Mm. Now, he's on the practice squad, and we'll see what happens this week. But, you know, I think the fact that the kick was made to end the game, to win the game for the Titans, I think you live to tell the tale for another week.
I think he gets one more week. I mean, I understand his prestige brings him in, but
oh yeah, you can't mess around. You know, it's and that's a tough call. But you know, he has shown. I mean, 87% percentage of you know, when you think about the completion. I mean, the success percentage that he's had as far as attempts and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, he's got that on his resume, but he wasn't just the only person there messing up. You know, all the blame, obviously, just like you quarterbacks sometimes get all the credit, sometimes they get all the blame.
Right.
There's things that they have to correct on special teams.
Well, and that's what I'm saying with the coaching. It just seems like there's something on the special team side that's not all the way there.
I just go the fact that no preseason games, and that certainly hurts.
Not every team went through it, though. That's the thing. If we had saw a bad play through the NFL all through the Sundays.
No, there was some play. I mean, look, you could start naming teams that people weren't on the same page. And so I understand what you're saying, but there were a lot of issues, a lot of turnovers made. Where if you'd had some preseason games, you wondered. And remember, like last night, I mean, Kevin Byard should have had a couple more interceptions last night. You know, Ryan Tannehill should have thrown for three interceptions. None of those happened. And so with regards to that, just because it doesn't show up on the ledger and on the box score and on the stat sheet doesn't mean those mistakes were there. I mean, they were there for the taking. And like an example last night, neither team took advantage of those opportunities, but they were right there in your hands, per se. Just like you can also make the argument, you didn't even have to come down to that field goal if A.J. Brown had come down with that completion in the end zone at the end of the game.
I feel pretty confident so far, even though it's just week one, that my prediction for Corey Davis to be a 1,000-yard receiver, I feel very confident in that so far. I know it's week one, and you could say he's inconsistent, but there was clearly there. AJ was getting all the attention.
You realize you just jinxed him.
No,
mightily.
No, I don't believe in that.
You just jinxed him mightily.
That boy plays good. He played some good football last night.
And it is a contract year.
Yeah, I think it's a huge part of it. And that catch he had on the sideline,
and boy,
that toe tap, oh my goodness.
You know, and speaking of this, by the way, you know, we often talk about players showing up with the crowds there, the big games. I thought Jerry Jeudy, and I don't know for this to be 100% sure, but I was thinking the fact that you don't see him dropping balls like that last night. Mm. And you wonder how much of it, because, you know, some players are game players, some players are practice players, some can do both well, some can do neither well. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if the lack of a crowd there hurt Jerry Jeudy in that situation from a mental standpoint, because you know, sometimes you get caught up in realizing there's nobody in the stands. If you're looking around, here you are, you're a rookie, your first game, and there's nobody there. It's almost, you had more people watching your high school games than you did last night in that stadium for Jerry Jeudy, for example. But, you know, he had a decent game, too, with his catches.
He still looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, you saw his routes. You know he's going to be a solid player in the NFL.
He was embarrassing that Titan secondary, too.
But he dropped a couple there. You know, he ended up with, 57 yards or somewhere in that ballpark?
Yeah.
He should have ended up with 100 because, you know, a couple of those, especially the big one that he dropped, that was going to go for a while.
I think people, too, we need to all realize that the Broncos were not a bad team last night either. Drew Locke looked very efficient he was doing. Some of those throws, I mean, you would say he shouldn't have done that, but you could say the same for Patrick Mahomes. That throw back across his body off his back foot
he was missing a couple of his wide receivers, too.
Right, and he was still making it happen.
They were out last night, you know, so the fact, and then the leading rusher from last year, a 1,000-yard rusher, he was out early.
Philip Lindsay, yeah, if he had not got injured, that would have been.
So you think about what Drew Locke lost immediately as far as the game was concerned. Look, it is what it is. and you get the win, and then if you're the Titans coaching staff, you're happy in the sense that you've got things, you got the attention of the players, you know that you've got an opponent coming up that had a decent Sunday as far as with a win. And so because of all those factors, you know, it was a major plus. Except if you had the Titans and having to give the 2.5, you weren't happy.
Well, yeah, but if you're the look, once again, I think this is the worst Titans you're going to see. Like score-wise, play-wise, all across, I think this is the worst they're going to see. This is their floor. This is where when they play bad, they're going to be in this kind of range. So there's a lot of optimism for this team and a lot of points that are going to be scored on Henry and Tannehill's shoulders.
Right. I mean, once again, you make those field goals that you should have made last night, make the extra points.
It's not even a breather.
27 points, that would have been a decent showing against the Denver team where, remember, last year the Titans had no points against the Broncos defense. So
we all could have went to bed earlier had he just kicked those field goals.
Amen to that. All right, if you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600. That's 844-5600. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's a wreck being cleared on 40 westbound near Stewart's Ferry Pike. Also on 24 eastbound near Jefferson Street on one of the latest accidents. It's busy out here on 40 east now as you make your way into Wilson County by 840 headed out towards Lebanon. Hey, celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest, September 25th through November 1st. All the details now at obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Nashville's premier steakhouse is Bob's Steak and Chop House in the Omni Nashville Hotel. Bob's Steak and Chop House was the first to bring A5 Wagyu beef to Music City. With a wine list to complement any meal, Bob's Steak and Chop House now has limited summer hours and seating. With the backdrop of Music City, call ahead and reserve your spot on the patio. Bob's Steak and Chop House, now with new limited summer hours and seating. Nashville's premier steakhouse, located in the Omni Nashville Hotel, 5th Avenue, downtown Music City. Are you looking for the ideal destination for family fun? A place with the best bowling, games, food and drink, and entertainment? Strike and Spare Family Entertainment is the answer. And with 5 centers in Middle Tennessee, there is a location near you. All open 7 days a week, including holidays. Visit their locations in Donaldson Plaza, Hermitage, and the Tusculum area. And enjoy an enhanced experience in Hendersonville at Circus World, including laser tag, roller skating, bumper cars, Time Freak, a laser maze, a virtual reality roller coaster, and an indoor bungee trampoline. Strike and Spare is expanding their Murfreesboro operations to the old Sears building in the Stones River Mall, with most of the attractions Hendersonville offers. Like them on Facebook for updates on the new Strike and Spare Murfreesboro. Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers are also the perfect place for your next gathering, from birthday parties to family reunions. For more information, visit strikeandspare.com. Remember, there's never a bad time for a good time at Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers.
Hey, Bill King here to talk about the Omni Nashville Hotel, like you've heard me do so many times. Bar line specifically here. New summer hours, 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Delicious food and drink. Bourbon barbecue chicken wings. Also, the Bear Bones Burger and everything else you're going to love on that menu. Remember, the Omni is also the location of Commitments Year Number 3, which is December 16th. Bar lines at the Omni Nashville Hotel, 5th Avenue, downtown.
Nashville Sports Radio 560 on 95.9 FM has been your home for sports for 20 years. From typewriters to Twitter, fax machines to Facebook, we have you covered 24/7 and on the go. Finding us online is as easy as at Nash Sports Radio. Twitter, at Nash Sports Radio. SoundCloud, at Nash Sports Radio. Facebook, at Nash Sports Radio. Or search your app store for WNSR. 20 years of sports. Anytime, anywhere. From Nashville Sports Radio 560 on 95.9 FM. Every weekday afternoon, it's the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Zach Williams. You know, I was looking at my preseason NFL power ratings that I, you know, put together. I'm one of the 25 local members of the media that does this each and every week. And my preseason, I had Kansas City 1, Baltimore 2, the Saints 3, San Francisco 4, and Seattle 5. And by the way, I had Tennessee in the sixth spot. My bottom of this list, I had Jacksonville 32nd, Washington 31st, Cincinnati in the 30th position, Carolina 29th, the Giants 28, and the Jets 27. I have to...
Don't you look foolish.
Well, I think now Cleveland is going to fall mightily to that 32nd
spot.
Yeah,
they're the worst team easily.
And then I'm going to probably put the Jets in at 31. So the Jets are going to fall four spots. Cleveland going to go in the basement, so they move up. Now, at the top, you know, I have to be honest with you. Remember, the best team in the regular season last year was not Kansas City. It was Baltimore. I'm going to leapfrog Baltimore over Kansas City. Because, you know, you don't want last year to have a lingering effect on what this season is. And to me, Baltimore, the way they played, the way they executed, the way Lamar Jackson has MVP written all over him again. And I thought about this, too, over the weekend. Think about, you know, here's Ben Roethlisberger playing for Pittsburgh. You think about every other starting quarterback in that division are all Heisman Trophy winners. So Big Ben is the only one that's not.
Now, the only winner, too. Well, no, Lamar Jackson's there.
The Saints, then, you know, you look at what as far as the New Orleans Saints at number three, are they the best team in the NFC?
Yeah, I think so.
Seattle's right behind them.
I think it goes them, Seattle, Rams.
See, that's what I have. So I'm going to have Baltimore 1, Kansas City 2. I'm going to keep the Saints where they are in the third spot. I'm going to move Seattle up 1. To number 4, and then the question would be, well, who am I going to put at number 5? And it may very well be Pittsburgh. I mean, because, you know, Green Bay is certainly going to jump high this week for me, but the team's dropping. You know, Philadelphia will drop, Dallas will drop, Minnesota will drop, Tampa Bay will drop as well. So the teams that I have moving up that I had in the top 15, for example, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Green Bay certainly all moving up.
Yeah, I think Green Bay, I love what Pittsburgh did, all right? I want to put that out there. I think they look great. But I think what Green Bay did against Minnesota was fantastic.
Absolutely.
And their defense, if we're saying the Steelers are the number one defense in the league right now, I'm saying that the Green Bay defense is not that far behind them either. And I think they have a better offense than the Steelers do right now. I think Green Bay is a very strong team. And they were last year, and they're continuing exactly where they left off last year to this year.
Indianapolis is one of those teams I had in the 15th spot that they're probably where they need to be. I'm not going to penalize them too much.
Well, however much you move the Jaguars is however much down you should move the Colts, in my opinion.
I mean, so I had them at 15, maybe 17th, somewhere in that. But there are so many teams that ahead of them. You know, Philadelphia, I'm sorry, when you're up 17-0 and you blow that lead against Washington and they outscore you by 27, I mean, there's a problem right mm-hmm. there. And so I'm not going to treat Philadelphia the same way as I treat, say, Indianapolis. You know, and look, Jacksonville is just one of those pesky teams. You know, they're not very good, but they're playing at home. And, you know, they usually kind of, these kind of games, they find ways to win like they did on Sunday.
I think the Eagles and the Colts are very similar. I think they're in the same boat. I put them near each other.
Arizona, by the way, I had them in the 20th spot. Arizona will be a climber this week. I'm not sure what my final, where I'm going to put them in my final thing, but they're going to probably jump up 5-6 spots this week.
They're a top 10 team in my mind, because they take on the NFC champions last year that didn't really lose a lot. And they held them in check and find offense. I mean, this was a team that nobody really thought was going to have this much of a climb.
And get the win.
And win against a good San Francisco team.
Well, and, you know, they struggled in the first half, but in the second half, they found ways to get it done. Like Houston, I'm not going to penalize. I had Houston in the 14th spot. I'm not going to penalize them too much because they lose to Kansas City on Thursday night on the road.
See, that's where I differ with you on the idea that you have the Ravens number one over the Chiefs. Is that the Chiefs beat what you had, number 14, pretty much just sequentially. A lot of other people do around there, 14. They're still, maybe you could flirt with the top 10.
You mean Kansas City beating Houston? Like
yeah,
that? Yeah.
Yeah. But when the Ravens beat the Browns, who is obviously the worst team that we've seen. I don't care what the preseason going into and everybody thought. I'm talking about what we saw on the field. That team was terrible. It was an ugly play. They're nowhere near. And I think, I'm not taking away from the Ravens here. They're a great team. They're obviously a top three team in the NFL. I just still think that the Chiefs had a tougher time with a much, 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 much better team in the Texans.
Well, I understand the opponent's much tougher, but at the same time, I'm also looking at what is the team doing? Is the team, how does the team look as far as taking care of its own business? And to me, Baltimore took care of its own business. Kansas City, and I go back to the fact that regular season-wise, Baltimore was the superior team than Kansas City last year.
Mm-hmm. They didn't have the injuries like with Mahomes and everything that happened, but I don't know. For me, I still think the Chiefs are number one. I think they're top of the mountain. They're coming off the Super Bowl. They beat another playoff contender team.
It will play itself out.
Oh, for sure.
During the regular season. So do they
play each other this year? I don't think they do.
I do. I think they're coming up. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they come up in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm, yeah, that's the game right there that everybody needs to keep on their calendars, because that'll be a monster game.
I can almost guarantee you they're playing. I'm not going to like bet the house on it or anything like that, but I can almost guarantee you.
Monday Night Football on the 28th. So, yeah, 2 weeks.
Wow.
That's a great Monday Night Football game.
The memory's still going strong for us today.
Yeah.
I like
there
that.
You go.
And still, if you're fairly sharp today, considering that...
you went to bed at like 2 in the morning.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. I don't know about you, but, because the game ends, what, 12:20, 12:30, whatever it was.
Somewhere around there.
And I can't just immediately go to sleep. I mean, I'm still a little wired, although I could fall asleep during the game. But at that point, I'm awake again. So, although
you weren't in the press conference?
No, I didn't stay up that late.
I stayed into that and then watched that and all that. And
no, I just got the transcript, so I didn't stay up that late. So third quarter though, I was fighting it. Luckily, and I don't know about you, but I don't miss anything because I'm also recording it. So
no, I don't record it.
Oh, yeah. So I record it, and I can go back and whatever, and I was able to do that, so I didn't miss anything.
I watched head to tail. I watched the whole thing, and it was a good game. Well, I thought it was a great game.
Well, by the end of the game, I'm caught up, so I'm in real time by the end of the game.
Right.
But thank goodness during the third quarter, I had the thing on DVR, because I would have missed about 10 minutes of action. So I needed that.
Yeah, see? It's all about knowing yourself.
It protected me, So, all right, we'll talk a little college football on the other side. Hey, we're getting closer. I mean, I can't do the math all of a sudden. We're, what, 13 days? How many days
somewhere
away?
Somewhere around there. I'm a radio guy.
That's right. A week from Saturday. How about that? Yeah. A week from Saturday, we have the kickoff, and 11 days. Let's say 11 days.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah, 11.
Still here, thinking about it.
There it is, 11 days. 11
What's
days.
What's the day? It's Tuesday?
No, so 26th, the day is the 15th. So 11 days from now, the kickoff for the SEC teams. And Tennessee is one of those teams in gearing up for this, have had their struggles with COVID-19. Players, missing a significant playing time as well. Don't know if you're going to be able to make up all the missed practices or not. How ready to go will they be? We'll talk about this with Ryan Callahan. He covers the Vols for GoVols247.com on the other side. You're listening to National Sports Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's a wreck being cleared on 40 westbound near Stewart's Ferry Pike. Also on 24 eastbound near Jefferson Street on one of the latest accidents. It's busy out here on 40 east now as you make your way into Wilson County by 840 headed out towards Lebanon. Hey, celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest, September 25th through November 1st. All the details now at obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
With the real estate market evolving, realtors stand ready to help. Realtors are an expert voice of reason in changing times, and they're working in new ways to guide you through virtual showings and safe closings, to be your ally in the fight for mortgage relief, to understand a neighborhood the way no algorithm can. That's the role of a realtor. This is a real estate season like no other, and realtors are ready. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi, I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
Well, before I left my campsite, I was putting out my fire, and out of nowhere, Smokey Bear showed up and hugged me?
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He likes it when people correctly put out their campfires. He's pretty big on wildfire prevention. He's just letting you know you did good. With a hug. He's a hugger.
I just got a bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
All right, I'm gonna let you go now. I've got a lot of ranger stuff to do. There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
At NFL Network, we're here for Thursday and the Battle of the Buckeye State.
I woke up feeling dangerous.
We're here for number one pick against number one pick. For AJ and OBJ.
I mean, how good is that?
For warp speed and sheer power.
What a catch!
For an old rivalry in a new era. We're here for Thursday. Bengals, Browns, Thursday Night Football, Thursday at 8, only on NFL Network.
Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio WNSR SkyCan forecast for this afternoon. A 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, with a high near 84 with an east wind 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 67. And Wednesday, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 83. Utilizing the resources of the Weatherbug Network on Nashville Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's Jeff DeWitt.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Listen to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show online live at WNSR.com.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. Zach Williams making sure everything runs smoothly. As a reminder, don't forget Braves baseball coming your way. Game two of a three-game series on the road taking on Baltimore. 6:20 for the pregame. First pitch at 6:35. Right now, a chance to switch a little gears and talk a little college football. Ryan Callahan, he covers the Vols in the SEC for GoVols247.com. Ryan, always a pleasure, buddy. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you know, your thoughts. I mean, this is tough to cover a team when obviously we're going through different times, when you're having to do interviews virtually and you're not getting a chance to really see what's going on. You're having to rely a lot and trust a lot of what is being told to you instead of letting your eyes tell you the real story.
Yeah, and that's increasingly become the case in recent years anyway, because practice access is so limited. In a normal time, we go in for about 15 minutes on a typical day at a Tennessee practice, and a lot of times that's once a week, especially during the season. So a little bit more in preseason camp. But, yeah, definitely going into this season, we have, I think, much less of a feel for just what to expect in any way from this team. Because you hear things, obviously, there are things we've picked up on about this team so far. But I think that's the challenge for anybody, not being able to see players go through rotations in practice. You don't have as good of a feel for the depth chart in some ways. Just seeing guys out there moving, you don't have a sense for sort of the overall athleticism and look of a team. You know, that first glimpse of Tennessee on September 26th will be helpful to all of us we'll be getting a feel for them just like fans will. For the first time, so it's definitely different, and it's a challenge. But at the same time, you know, I'm not sure how much we'll know about any of these teams going into the season anyway, because COVID-19 presented so many challenges for so many teams. Tennessee's been missing dozens of players for the past couple weeks. That makes it tough too to figure out what a team really has, and I think coaches are struggling with that a little bit too. But the lack of access, definitely a challenge.
I felt like Trey Smith summed it up quite well, because he was asked about it and how does this year differ from other years. And he talked about the fact that, quote, this has probably been the weirdest camp I've ever been a part of, traditionally speaking. And I think that kind of sums it up. And because of that, and then you throw into the other factors, too. You're talking about players that are not going to get probably their full complement of practice time. You just don't know what you're going to get the first couple of weeks. It may be 3 or 4 weeks before a team really starts playing like they're capable of playing.
Yeah, I mean, a team like Tennessee that's had such an interrupted camp, you know, not getting the full complement of practices, as you said, still worrying about fundamentals, you know, going into the season. Jeremy Pruitt's talked about that multiple times now, that this team's going to need to be focused on fundamentals more so than usual. Going into the season, because you just haven't had the full team out there at the same time. You know, they're going to have an offensive line that's not practice together very much. So continuity there and chemistry could be a challenge. There's so many things that might be off a little bit to start the season, and that's after a few weeks of practice. You know, we wondered how long it would take teams to sort of get ready for a season if things were, you know, delayed. Well, they've had time to practice, and it's still not going to feel quite right. So, I was glad to hear Trey Smith say that, because we've heard so many players being asked similar things and, you know, kind of trying to shrug off a lot of the changes. I think people have to admit it has to be the weirdest year for any of these players to have gone through anything like this, because it's not a normal camp. You're not practicing back-to-back days a lot of times. Tennessee's not. You know, they've been practicing four times a week at most. So you not having the typical schedule, it doesn't feel like a grind. Having so many players out, it's definitely got to be different, and everything about it has to feel a little weird to someone, especially like Trey Smith, who's been around for 4 years now.
Ryan Callahan joining us again. How much does that help then, having the continuity and the consistency, knowing that there's Jim Chaney still there, especially when we look at the offense for Tennessee this year?
Yeah, I have thought this offseason that it is probably an advantage for Tennessee a little bit, but, you know, for once they have some continuity at both coordinator positions. You have Jim Chaney back for a second year as offensive coordinator. You have Derek Ansley back for a second year as defensive coordinator. And in Jarrett Garantano's case, you know, you got a fifth-year senior quarterback, and he's working with a second-year coordinator and a second-year position coach for the first time in his career. He's had literally a different quarterback's coach every year of his career until this year. So that having some continuity there helps. And then just having some seniors in some important places, I think all that together, it sort of works in a Tennessee's favor going into the season. Now we'll see how much that makes a difference, and whether that really is a factor in what may be such an unusual year. But I do think that's at least something helping Tennessee on paper, is that you've got some players that have done it before, have played a lot of football. They've got experience. They know what they're doing generally. You're not having to worry about installing new schemes where you missed out on that valuable practice time in the spring and it set you back. So I think they're in better shape from that standpoint, and definitely with the coordinators, I think that's a big deal.
How important is it for this offensive line to get Cabe Mays eligible? I know it's still up in the air, but how important is it for this squad to get him eligible this year?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal because, I mean, Tennessee will have a pretty good offensive line with or without him, I think. It's a little bit thinner in terms of depth of just how many guys you feel really good about if Cade Mays is not able to play. And, you know, they've still been shuffling guys around a little bit, trying to find the best five without him, because they're having to sort of come up with contingency plans with and without him. You know, it's hard to settle on what their best five might be without knowing, A, where Cade Mays might fit in if he can play, and then B, if he's going to play. So they've had to figure out both, and, you know, that they've got some good options. He gives them some versatility there, being able to play guard or tackle, really, and probably on either side of the offensive line if needed. So they've got some good options, but it's not quite as loaded of an offensive line without him. It's a good line either way. But I think having a guy like Cade Mays potentially, you know, takes it to another level. So I think it is a big deal, and if this team's going to be pretty good this year and take a real step forward, I think having a third-year player like Cade Mays with that kind of experience, who's another NFL prospect, definitely helps an offensive line that has, you know, maybe has to carry the load for Tennessee a little bit. And they need to be good in the running game, and they need to protect Garantano well, and a lot of that's going to come down to that offensive line living up to the hype.
Ryan, we've brought this up before, and I really believe that what happened in the Alabama game for Jarrett Garantano, and, you know, that mistake at the goal line could really help him moving forward. And based on everything that's coming out, and look, I know they're just words. We'll see. The proof will be in the pudding, per se, when we get to week one and moving on. But, you know, based on what other players are saying about Garantano, talking about he has a control of this offense, it looks like the team has bought totally into him, and they feel like they're all on the same page now.
I think that's one of the things that's always been sort of working in his favor in terms of making him the starter, is that he has kind of had this team, I think, for the past couple of years. I think certainly last year and this year, there was the real sense that it was his team for the first time, really. There was no one challenging for the starting job last year, same deal this year. Even though there was some hope among Tennessee fans, maybe Harrison Bailey as a freshman comes in and pushes for the starting job, that hasn't happened for a couple of reasons. So the fact that it's basically his show and that he's been around so long and that most of the guys on this team have worked with him for a while and that he's grown as a leader too, I think all of that, helps him in that regard. The only question about Garantano has nothing to do with the intangibles or any of that stuff. It really is just, is he going to go out there and deliver when the time comes? And he's done that more consistently in the past, since the second half of last season, as you said, since that Alabama game. He certainly played better down the stretch. Obviously reclaimed the starting job the last few games of the year. Didn't play that great in the bowl game, though, and got benched in that game. And I think that game going into the offseason was just a reminder that he still has to show it more consistently. He has to prove he can be the guy. And this, to me, there's some pressure on him this year. In a season like this where you don't have those non-conference games to ease in, you don't have those non-conference games to work out the kinks in the offense, you go right into it with a pivotal game against South Carolina. I think there's still a relatively short leash if he were to struggle. I think it's a really interesting situation because in one sense, his team, as long as he can take it and run with it, but if he struggles, I do wonder if you 2-3 games, how long we wait if he really struggles out of the gates. It's a really interesting dynamic because Tennessee does have other options at quarterback and they need to be good early, especially because there's some real win opportunities in the first 6 games or so.
You know, it's one thing if Jeremy Pruitt says, hey, we're ready, we're dealing with COVID-19, everybody's on the same page, they understand the adversity we're all going through, just like other college football programs are going through it. It's another thing for the players to talk about it, to the sense that, I was, like one of the comments from Kovaris Crouch today, the linebacker, he talked about the fact that hasn't been all that difficult. And so that's kind of like, The interesting thing, if you're an adult, you think about the adversity. If you're an 18 to 22-year-old, it's like, it's life. No big deal. We're ready to go. And once the week one comes around, we're ready to kick off. Coaches love to hear that, the fact that they can kind of block out whatever's going on in the outside world.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that in some ways that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. But I think it's somewhat easier for college players, young players like that, to sort of shrug off things like this. I just think there's always so much optimism in young people. So some just sort of a everything's going to work out okay kind of mindset that really comes in handy in a time like this when so many things are just weird to everybody involved. So when you hear Trey Smith say that this is the weirdest camp he's been a part of, that's different from what we're hearing from some other guys, just because I think most players are like, it'll all work out, it'll be fine. So, yeah, I think that is helpful, and some of that does come from just the feeling that everything will be okay. Part of that's also just optimism that Tennessee's program and that the guys he knows and trusts are going to work through it. So there's a lot of positive in that, and I think the resiliency of players is one of the things that will help this season as much as anything go relatively smoothly, if it does, is that these guys want to have a season, they want to play. They know what's at stake and what they need to do, generally speaking. I think they've been fairly, from what we've heard, fairly responsible. I think we were all kind of expecting players to do the dumbest things possible and, have COVID-19 spread throughout the locker rooms everywhere, but based on irresponsible behavior. I think it's, even though it's spread some, it's been sort of mostly against, despite their actions. I think they're doing their best to stay responsible. So there's a lot of things about players' mindsets, I think, that has helped with this. And I don't feel like they think it's quite so difficult to deal with all this because they're young, resilient players that are ready to play football.
Ryan, early on in camp, Jeremy Pruitt was certainly making a point to acknowledge those lower on depth charts about their play, at the same time probably using it as a motivational tool to motivate the guys that were considered starters as far as this year's team. Have we got any more examples of that, or is that kind of conversation toned down?
I think as far as the conversations about just challenging the players lower on the depth chart, or which part?
Yeah, I remember, for example, he was bragging about Latrell Bumpus and what he could bring to the defense this year, and I think it was like a combination acknowledging him and what he's bringing as far as intensity, at the same time pushing those players ahead of him.
Yeah. So at the defensive line, we've definitely continued to hear, and that position group in particular, we've continued to hear some concern, definitely, I think is fair to say, with where that group was. And so I think that was very much a challenge to the rest of the guys in that group. And that group as a whole just needed to take it to another level. I don't think they've gotten there just yet. You know, in some of their scrimmage work the past couple of weeks, we've continued to hear the defensive line not quite playing up to par, being one of the biggest concerns that came out of it. So especially against an offensive line that's been missing some key players, because that's where they've had some COVID-related absences on the offensive line at wide receiver. So for that defensive line to be struggling a bit against a not 100%, you know, missing some key players group on the offensive line, that's not a great sign. So that in particular is where we've seen that the most. I think for the most part across the board, different position groups, we haven't heard too much of that. But if you're singling out a specific concern for Tennessee going into the season, I think it's the defensive line, not knowing just what you're getting out of that group. You know, after last year, they had a lot of veterans that played. They overachieved a bit. Now this year, we're kind of wondering, was a lot of that fool's goal? Is this group going to take a step back? I don't think we know what to expect from that group based on the preseason they've had.
We're 1 week away from being to game week, chapter number one. Do me a favor, let the listeners know again what they can expect week in and week out from you and the fine folks with GoVols247.com.
Yeah, tons of daily practice and typical in-season coverage. We're pretty much getting into that now. Talked to some players today, assistant coaches hopefully tomorrow. Lots of daily coverage like that, recruiting as well. We've got our weekly recruiting chat tonight, so plenty of all that to come, and already starting to look ahead to the South Carolina game next weekend here in the next couple of days. We'll have some fun content on that, looking at the depth chart right now with a story on the front page. So lots to check out at govols247.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at RyanCallahan247.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful night. We'll be in touch soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy. That's Ryan Callahan joining us from Knoxville. 615-844-5600 if you'd like to be a part of the conversation. With this friendly reminder for you, you know, if you're planning on drinking, the bottom line is don't get behind the wheel. There's no need to consult the playbook. The winning strategy is to always designate a sober driver. Fans don't let fans drive drunk. This message brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Good afternoon. The police are still clearing up this wreck, and we're looking at it live here on 40 westbound between Stewart's Ferry Pike and Donaldson Pike. It's over to the side. The heaviest flow in this area is coming eastbound on I-40. All that traffic flow is headed back towards Wilson County. Working a couple of wrecks out here, one at 10th at Dr. Martin Luther King, West End and Elmington Avenue. That should be cleared in just a few minutes. Check out the new Andre Chicken Sandwich, now available at Prince's Hot Chicken. Stop by right now, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck, you're on time traffic.
The final lap with Carrie Murphy is on.
NASCAR Xfinity Series action going down from Richmond, where Justin Allgaier proved he is a championship threat for the 2020 series title, sweeping the weekend, heading to victory lane in both races. For race number one, he led 78 of the 250 laps.
Feels great. You know, we've had fast Camaros all year long, and everybody at Junior Motorsports has worked their butts off and put us in position many times. And, you know, the definition of luck is when opportunity meets preparation. When we've been prepared, the opportunity hasn't come, and when we've had the opportunity, we just haven't been prepared. And the team today did a fantastic job of executing. We just hitting our stride at the right part of the season, and we need to keep doing what we're doing and keep executing, and we'll have a great shot at a lot more of these throughout the end of the year.
Let's see here. Justin Haley was second, followed by Kyle Busch, Austin Cindric, and Ross Chastain, rounding out the top five. For race number two, Allgaier dominated this thing. 135 laps led of the 250.
And to be able to go back-to-back. You know, that was the thing last night, is I was so pumped to be able to get Blake Koch to victory lane and get filter time to victory lane. But then to turn that back around and to get Brandt to victory lane today just made the weekend that much more special.
For this one, Jeb Burton finished second, followed by Ross Chastain, Harrison Burton, and Noah Gragson rounds out the top five. Playoff rankings look like this. Justin Haley is fifth. Then you got Brandon Jones, Noah Gragson, Justin Allgaier, Chase Briscoe, and Austin Cindric leads by 71 points and 5 wins as that series heads to Bristol this weekend.
Like us at facebook.com/thefinallap.
Whether class is in school, at home, or a little bit of both, school goes on.
And Staples has everything you need to start the year right.
From lap desks to notebooks, noise-canceling headphones to UV sanitizers.
And all at amazing prices. This week, pocket folders, comp books, and 4-ounce Elmer's glue are just 25 cents each.
Shop in-store or pick up curbside. School on, save on at Staples.
Ends 9/19. In-store only. Limit 6. While supplies last. Curbside available in most stores.
With so many new pet owners, Kezia's Grooming can't keep up.
Kezia's Grooming? Sorry, we'll book solid through the weekend. I can give you a call back, though, if something opens up.
It's time to hire.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. The moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined, according to Breezy HR 2019. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now. 615-844-5600.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Zach Williams, 615-844-5600, 844-5600. Coming up in hour number two, as long as there's no breaking news about the Big Ten, you know, the anticipation is there for them to take a vote sometime later today, whether or when they're going to start the college football season. Is it going to be in end of October? Is it going to be around Thanksgiving? Time will tell. But at this point, Barrett Salee is scheduled to join us just after 5. He is not only the National College Football Writer with CBSSports.com, he's a co-host on SiriusXM College Sports Channel 84. We'll also visit with Teresa Walker, talking Titans, Vols, Vandy, and more with the Associated Press here in Nashville around 5:35. Hey, by the way, a reminder for you, don't forget, Strike and Spare Family Entertainment. If you're in the Laverne, Smyrna, Murfreesboro area, just around the corner, we're going to be talking about the grand opening of the new location down in Murfreesboro. We've been talking about it all summer long as they're making the transition to the new operations, expanded operations in the old Sears building and the Stones River Mall. And once completed, going to have the similar type of attractions that you find at the enhanced experience up in Hendersonville at Circus World. Now, you can keep up with all the updates by liking the Strike and Spare Murfreesboro Facebook account. Also, locations to serve you, Donaldson Plaza, Hermitage, the Tusculum area as well. If you need more information, you can go online at strikeandspare.com. And remember what we always say, there's never a bad time for a good time at Strike and Spare Family Fun Center.